because you're jumping back into the gap. I let the coach, it's either sideline, two on the side, three on the side. That's off the second cut. Leads the country in offensive rebounding.
Hey, coach. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Oliver, the founder, CEO, and creative mind behind BasketballImmersion.com. This is the podcast where you will hear real basketball coaching conversations. Whether you are a new or experienced coach at any level of basketball, these coaching conversations will give you practical ideas to stimulate your coaching and make what you do even better. Without any more delay, let's share the game. What a tremendous opportunity for all of us as coaches today to have former Brose Bamberg head coach, Andrea Trinchereri, with us today. Coach, welcome to the podcast. So excited to have you here and look forward to learning from you as we discuss so many basketball topics. Coach, one of the things that I've seen a lot in your interviews and in different articles that I've read about you is that you often refer back to the history of the game and that you go to great lengths to educate your players about the game, the past, present, and future, so to speak, of the game of basketball. I think that's tremendous. Can you discuss a little bit why you do that?
Yes. I tell you one thing. When I start a season, I used to put my team in a class with chairs and tables, a test, a trivia about basketball. Because I believe that knowing the past can lead you in a better future. And knowing who was the best player in that age, what he did, what was his life, it's very important, especially for the young generations. And to me, it's extremely important to use what happened to be better in the future. And I'm not afraid to do that. Sometimes players look at me like, is this guy crazy? And yes, maybe every coach is a little bit crazy, okay? But I will do it even in my next team. So
it's such a wonderful idea, and it's a great way to connect, you know, as you said, the past with the present, but also to connect your players to what their future possibilities are, which is such an important part of this, is that you're trying to get them to dream about what's possible, to work towards what's possible.
Sometimes to follow the footprints of somebody else can lead you in a better place. And we all think that we have to do it by it's my legs, it's my strength, it's my, you know, all by myself. But basketball is a very, very smart game. To me, it's one of the smartest team sports in the world, in the history. So definitely the sport that is developing faster than anything else. Game is changing so quickly. Adjustments, game changes, how the players are playing now. Think about, I don't see any other sport where you have big guys that are dribbling. And 20 years ago, big guys cannot move outside of the paint. Now big guys are shooting threes and dribbling the ball down the court. So why not to see and to learn about the past, the history, to become better now?
Tremendous to connect that. And it's such a beautiful game. And I know you have such a passion for it. And one of the first things that I learned about you when I heard your name was about pick and roll basketball. And a quote that I attribute to you is that basketball is a five-man game, not just a two-man game. And I know we're going to talk a lot about pick and roll, but let's start there.
Pick and roll was kind of created to put the two best players in the guards and in the bigs to play a two-man game. But you know better than me how many pick and rolls teams are playing every year, more. It's about between 20 and 25% of total offense of EuroLeague teams and also NBA teams. The numbers are slightly different, but not so big difference. They're playing pick and roll. And this is also the best way to make the defense better because they are exposed to play pick and roll defense 140 times per game. So that forced the defense to become better, and they became better. The players became better athletes, and everything on defense now is accurate with different options. And now, what is the next step? When you play pick and roll, you have to become better. And I believe, I always say to my players the first day, we are going to be a pick and roll team, but don't forget that below average team play pick and roll as a two-man game. Good teams involve three or four players in a pick and roll action. Great teams are able to play with five players. What I mean, I always compare basketball to chess. You're playing chess. Offense is action, defense is reaction. If you're able to play with the right speed, playing the right way, that means taking the right decision, defense can cover two men. Maybe they are able to move quick enough to cover three men, but the fourth and the fifth, they're going to be open. So now it's to convince the handler to deliver the ball at the right time to the right player. And this is the hardest job for a coach.
Definitely challenges to that. Now, what are some of the best ways that you found to involve the other three players?
I want to start in a different way. When I take a rookie from college to Europe, the first thing they see, and I don't say the best schools, because Villanova, Michigan State, they all play pick and roll as a team, okay? But let's say a small school where you are the man and you have to produce every night. They see, they have what is so-called tunnel vision. They don't see anything else. And it's very hard to convince them that in Europe, when you beat your man, there will be one help, and there will be another help, and another help. So you're going to crash in a wall without knowing why this is happening. And also, NBA is looking a lot towards international. And when I say international, coaches to European coaches, because we had to really go very deep into details to be able to have an advantage on the pick and roll. So go back to your question. First of all, the spacing, it's the most important thing. I compare spacing like a human being. You don't move one time. You are to keep moving and adjusting to all movement of the ball. And to make a very stupid example, I believe examples are a very quick way to reach the point when you explain even to a player. Let's say that we play a top pick and roll with two players behind the ball. So a very common action. But the opponent coach doesn't let you go on the screen. So you have to turn the angle of the screen and go opposite. But now the pick and roll becomes two players in vision and only one player behind the ball. It's a complete different spacing. And it's the same play, same action, same call, but a completely different development. And you have to be ready to adjust 0.5. No, you don't have 3 seconds. So spacing is the most important thing to make your pick and roll work. And I'm obsessed with spacing. The corners are corners, not 2 steps out of the corner. So you need to stretch the defense as much as you can. You need to know what the spacing will be according to any different coverage the defense will put on your pick and roll action.
How are you developing that spacing then? Is it emphasis? Is it drill based? Is it film? Is it a combination? How do we develop that spacing that you're obsessed with?
Very good question. When I started, the practice was developing a little different way. We all had a warm up, then some fast break drills, then some defensive drills, and then some offensive breakdowns, and then 5-on-5. Do you agree with me? Basically, yes. It was okay.
For sure.
Now this is done. It's Jurassic. And I love to develop one topic per practice.
Okay.
So I start, everything is related, even the pre-warm-up. So I always say to, let's say, my assistant coach who runs the player's development, okay, today we're going to work on pick and roll passing. So you start from 1-on-0, 2-on-0 pick and roll passing. So according to the coverage, there is the right pass. You cannot just say pass the ball because different coverage, there is different, I would say, maximum 3 options. You don't have 25 different passes if the defense is correct, if the defense is a solid defense. I always try to coach my players against the best defense in the world. So they're going to do this good. So we have to have the right pass at the right time with the right spacing and to the right guy. So everything is, so if I talk about pick and roll, I develop a 2 hours practice from the warm-up to the shooting drills, to the breakdowns, to the 5-on-5 for the pick and roll. And then at least that day, I covered many details that maybe will stay in the memory of the player a little bit longer. Was it clear or?
Absolutely, no. I mean, it's moving away from a very drill-based to more of a conceptual or games-based is what we call it. And,
yes. You know, I learned that you can do through playing in a practice, you can coach everything. But it's not that you just let them play. You have to correct them. Every mistake, or not every mistake, most of the key mistakes. So there is a very nice Italian expression. You can reach to Rome with many different roads. And this works also for basketball. I don't say that my way is the way, but it's what you do, how you do it, with how much passion and emphasis. This is the point.
Perfect. Perfect. So how do you stop things when you want to coach them? Let's get very specific about practice, because I love practice. What is your, is it a cue? Is it something that you give a player and you say, stop, and we're going to correct this?
Practice. I always make a huddle and I say, today, we're going to work on this. I always give the menu to the players of the day, the targets, and I always give individual targets. Because if my big guy is not a good screener and I want him to improve, and we have a pick and roll practice, means that for 2 hours he must screen, let's say 1,000 of times, he must put a little bit of emphasis in how to screen. And I accept mistakes because mistakes are part of the process. But we have to be aware that we are doing a mistake, and who's making the mistake must be aware that he must do it better. Of course, you cannot stop every time. But at a certain point, if you are not doing what you're supposed to do, we have a problem. Very simple.
So fascinating, picking one topic per practice, everything's related. So it's not like you're not coaching other things that are happening. But how much of the next, say, if you focus on screening this practice, the next practice, if they're not screening the way you did the last practice, then there wasn't transfer from the one practice to the next. So that is the challenge for a coach. How do you handle those situations?
I understand that you're a good coach because this is happening every day to me.
Every day to me too.
I set priorities. So there are individual priorities when you play pick and roll. So the first thing is, who's running the handler? If he's not willing to pass the ball, why we should run the pick and roll. But then what will happen? He won't be aggressive. And then the pick and roll won't work. So if you just play the pick and roll to pass the ball, defense will not be engaged. So we have to tell him, listen, you have to engage the defender on you. Then you have 2 dribbles to take a decision. If you take a decision later than 2 dribbles, it will be too late. So you have to be aggressive to engage the defense. Then you have to see if you can go. And we say, this is a good shot, this is a bad shot. And one thing, it's not a good shot when you score. A good shot is a good shot even if you miss. And what I learned in 20 years career is, when you take open shots and you miss, it's just a mistake. It's not anything more than that.
Right.
Yeah. So you want to say, I want to take that shot if I have to lose the game tonight because this shot is not falling in and is the right shot, I will move on. This is the teaching process. And so the guard should be aggressive, should engage the defense. But if we don't have a screen, the defense won't be engaged because the small will go over or under the screen. So angles of the screens are very important. Now I tell you what is my obsession. I want bigs to run to create a small separation, 1-2 steps, when they set the screen from their defender. And the rule that is, when I stop this every time, when the guards don't wait for the screen. They always anticipate because they want to reject, they want to take speed and everything. But this is the best way to have the worst pick and roll offense, because one time the referee will call foul because you stay on the shoulders of the big. You have to screen, you have to hit him. So if the guard moves earlier, he will move and adjust the screen. This is an illegal screen. And next time he won't screen because, sorry, why I have to go out, foul out because the guard is not waiting for me. This is something that you have to really stop from the first, very beginning. So the rule is the guard to use the screen should wait. The big has the feet set. Then you can go. You can always reject, and I always push my players to try to reject, to check the defense, because this will make the screen better, with a better angle. Then, let's talk about angles.
Before we talk about angles, because I want to talk about angles, let's get even deeper, because I love how you said this, but what does feet set mean? Because in a lot of basketball, the trend is bigs are not setting screens. They're slipping early and they're leaving, and sometimes that's part of the play. But I find by default too many players are doing that. So jump stop.
Okay. It's very true. They are slipping because they want to avoid the contact because they think they're going to be more open. Mm-hmm. Perfect. There is a situation where you have to slip as a big because it's the right way to play. But it's only one situation. When the big guy on defense is edging or blitzing, then you have to be an available receiver as soon as possible and you slip. But this is the only situation. I can give you a slip one time to steal a shot, something quick, but one time. The other 49 times, if the defense is not edging, you have to set a screen. So, and this is something that goes back to, we have to play the right way. Action and reaction. I guarantee my players, if you are able to play with the right speed and right decision, defense cannot stop you. It will be a matter of taking open shots and making that shots. Nothing else. So the big sprint, make a jump stop, feet square like shoulders, same. How you open the feet are
width.
Yeah. Thank you. Help me. And if it's a possible a little wider, a little bit, let's say, a little bit more, because then if the referee is yet always to see what they call and they don't call. You know, some years in Europe they call when you are very wide, the base of the screen is very wide. They call it. Some years no, but I believe. Another thing you have to tell, if you set a good screen, you're going to be the one that will be open.
Of course. What's the cue to release the screen?
Okay. You have to hit, but hit is not your target. It's a consequence of your jump stop, because then it's a foul. So basically, you go and you stop, let's say, like this, some inches before. You don't make the contact. It's the guard that makes the contact, because you set like a wall on his path. Okay, then you hit, and then when the ball passes by your shoulders, you have to make the quickest step possible to the rim. I don't talk too much of how to open the screen, because it depends on the school. I don't like when they open with the back, because it's slower.
Right.
But if you have a player that is good on this, I don't change this. is a matter of balance.
Great.
It's like, it's a very sensitive area. It's like when you change the shooting form of a player, you need to be very careful.
Tremendous point there, coach. And I think so many coaches, hopefully they caught that when you say on a ball screen, the guard makes the contact.
Because I think defense, because it's like a wall.
Yeah. I mean, I think too many people conceptualize it as the bigs, the responsible one for the contact, but the guard makes the contact by waiting for the screen, using the screen, and all those details that you talked about. So, hey, now let's get into angles. That's tremendous. And I don't know if we want to relate it specifically, but you do such a creative job with some of the Spain action that I've seen. And so much of that has to do with...
Let me tell you, because you call it Spain.
No.
All the
states. What should I call it?
I believe that the first one that ran this was in 2009. And I believe was, I'm pretty much sure, was Jelko Bradovic with the Panathinaikos.
Okay.
But then the United States played against Spain at the Olympics, and that came out at that moment. So we call it Spain, but it's, to me, it's a little different. But let's say, you know,
no,
knowledge.
Coach,
knowledge.
Hey, I love that. But again, it's, and it's not in defense. It's no way did I imply that Spain came up with it, because I know that it's not how it works. It's just that's what became popular. But
okay.
I'll give you an example. The Brad Stevens sideline inbound play.
Yes.
Where he skips it to the weak side and then gets a three. Yes. When yes. I posted that on Twitter, there were so many people from the EuroLeague that told me that that play has existed for a few years or many years over there. And that's awesome. I mean, we all borrow from somewhere. So
true. We all steal. I steal every day something. So
well, I'm going to steal a lot from you. So let's talk about angles then, coach, on ball screens.
Okay, talk about the Spain pick and roll. First, you have to talk about the angle of the screen of the big. The first rule, I'm talking about pick and roll on set plays, not drag action, okay? For the big is to try to avoid the chance to the guard to go under on defense. This is the first thing, because I tell you, sometimes the topic should be my life, my mistakes, okay? So I said, okay, if they go under, I do rescreen, okay? But first of all, it's something slow. Second, if you do rescreen, you have to rebuild the spacing. And you don't have every year a very crisp team that is able to readjust the spacing like this, okay? So if the defense goes under, I want that they pay. So the angle of the screen should be a little with the back towards the corner or the baseline. It's like a flat screen. So if they go under, I can take speed and go downhill, because there will be more space between the defender and the ball. So it won't be easy for the guard to catch me if I take speed. So I like when angle all screens towards the corner. This makes the surface, you know, in the past, let's say that the screens were parallel to the sideline. Do you agree with me?
Yes, of course.
Now, again, this is Jurassic.
Yes.
Not working anymore. So now the screens are more diagonal, corner to baseline. I would say with between 45 and 30 degrees. This is as I see. Then the Spain action. I use that a lot. I had great advantage, because I love to build an advantage early in the shot clock.
Yes.
And then to use this advantage and to put the ball in the hands of the player I want open. Okay. That means maybe my go-to guy must create the advantage, and the team with the right spacing should keep the advantage and then use the advantage. So the Spain action is a good ball screen and a guard screening the big on defense. But to do it in the correct way, you should prepare your team to the reads, because to a possible defensive coverage, that is the perfect read. You cannot skip steps on this. So what every team they're trying to do, they're dropping with a big, okay, and they switch guard.
Yes.
Because nobody, when you do it as a surprise, you and the defense is high flat or containing defense on pick and roll, high containing. The guard set a screen towards the corner and becomes like a second screen for the ball handler. And there is a layup because the big guy cannot help. So what other teams does? Okay, the screen, I cannot fight the screen in the right time to be in front as a big. So I switch guard. So what I teach to my players, as soon as you see the guard defending the back screen over your outside shoulder, you have to disappear, slipping the screen and running on the opposite guard. Like this is a 2-on-1 because they are preparing the switch and you are not there to switch.
So where are they leaving? Sorry, go through that again. So that guard's okay. Leaving when they're identifying the switch.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I'm the guard setting the screen.
Yeah, for the okay. Bank. Yeah.
So, and the screen and roll action is going for the right hand of the handler.
Yep.
So when I see with my eyes that the guard is preparing to switch going over my left shoulder, so I see him here.
Yes.
I understand that they are preparing to switch. And I run opposite guard. So I go on the left guard. So they switch, but there's no player to switch back because I just disappear from my action.
Right.
So there's 2-on-1.
They're sprinting to the 3-point line in spacing, or they're sprinting to space?
Spacing yeah. To shoot the ball or yes, play close.
Of course. Okay, I got
because,
you.
Because let's say X1 and X2. Okay, X1 is on ball, X2 is guarding the screener. So X2 takes the ball, and X1 should take the 2-man, the 2-guard. If I put separation, how he can rematch up? How he can switch back? It's not possible. But because game is very physical, and the big guy is dropping, so your big guy must hold the screen a little bit more to give room and space to the guard to attack. Another wrinkle that is extremely, extremely nice is the big guy set the first pick and roll and then set another back screen or like a flare screen to delay the switch, guard. It's again a 2-on-1 situation.
Oh, that's great stuff. Because we're going to see that obviously more and more switching on defense at all levels. So learning how to handle that's so important.
Action and reaction.
Yeah.
If you know what they're doing, defense will be always late.
Is there anything else you want to highlight about the Spain pick and roll action that you've found for any level of coach? Is it an easy thing to get players to understand?
It's not easy, but it's valuable because it's a nice action and you need to have timing because the guard should not be there too early to screen, not too late. And you really force your players to read and react.
I've heard you say before, and it may apply here or not, but you've got 2 dribbles to decide what to do.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
And this is every, I would say, on basic coverage. For example, when they show their edge hard, I believe that they should take a decision even on the first one. Because if you are able to move the ball against show very early, they are done. Defense must rotate and you have an open player. The worst thing to do when they try to show on the ball is to hold the dribble. This is the worst thing you can do. And this is very typical from the American guards because they want to beat the hell.
And I'm going to bring that up because that leads into what I've seen with a lot of problems for coaches with the Spain action is that the point guard or the player with the ball is trying to get around and get separated too far from where the open players are actually. Do you understand what I mean by that? That they're trying to turn the corner instead of to score themselves instead of accepting that they're being taken out of that opportunity to find the open player.
When you told me, you made me a list of questions, you know, and
yes.
I read it very carefully. And one question that I like very much is how you teach all these things.
Decision-making, yes.
Decision-making, exactly. There is only one thing that as coaches we cannot do, is buy time. The certain amount of time we have to make it work. So you cannot practice 24 hours for one thing because you have a lot of things to do. So I learned that you need to help your team. And how? I was very romantic when I started. I want my players to read and react everything. And I overload my player. I used to overload my players with details. The biggest thing that they're doing in Golden State is how they're able to make them play the right way without choking their creativity, but playing together. Because when you load your team with informations, you see them like an old computer that is slow. You see players when they play, they cannot think. If you think in a basketball game, you're done. You don't have one chance. You have, what is the job of the coach? Is to make their instinct rational. So I play with instinct because when a player plays with instinct, is unstoppable. But doing the right thing, this is the toughest job. But after many years trying different things, I learned that you as a coach can help them. So let's say Spain pick and roll, defense hard show, and we try to go around and we lose all the spacing, nobody's open, and then becomes another pick and roll with 4 seconds on the shot clock. Not a good offense. So the problem is not the Spain pick and roll. The problem is that we are not able to do the right thing against that kind of defense in every situation. So as a coach, I call a situation where it's easier for my players to see the right read and to deliver the ball as soon as possible. What is the hardest thing to guard for a defense that is showing, edging, call it as you want? The short roll, right?
Yes.
But on the Spain pick and roll, you cannot play the short roll. So you don't call the Spain pick and roll. You do something else against this defense. You deliver the ball to the short roll. You have 2 corners and the defense is done. So next time you help the team with the right calls, you're going to play Spain pick and roll. The guard will disappear because we want to go, and you deliver the ball to the big guy on the short roll, and you have a system how to punish that defense.
So you help your team by not being stubborn about trying to run one thing, run the right thing.
I believe that, especially with teams that are not with Magic Johnson, Kevin Durant, or the best players in the world, where the size, the skills are so big that they can do whatever they want. When you play against LeBron James, what do? You cross yourself. Because every choice is beaten by his athleticism, his reading, and his size. Let's say that we are normal coaches coaching normal players. We need to help them. You talk about play call. There is the right call in your playbook to beat any kind of defense. But you need to coach live. Every possession of the game, you have to know what they're going to do, how they're going to do it, so you can be on time to help your team.
Now, I saw this, and this is something that I wanted to ask you about, because according to, I don't know, is it Synergy, the stats, I think, but the efficient offense, you ran an extremely efficient offense at Brody Bamberg, but you did say that you controlled the game, taking speed and transition off the table.
Okay, it's a very fair question. All coaches are control freak.
Yes.
We are control freak. But sometimes, I'm coming from a country where creativity is a law, Italy. So we cannot do the things by the law. We have to be creative. So I'm not afraid to be creative. Sometimes having more, it's another stupid example. What is the best coach? The one that is flexible or the one that has very strict principles? So you start a game, you believe in your defensive system, okay? This is my rules, we're going to do this no matter what. And then after 2 quarters, your pick and roll defense is struggling and they're scoring 3-point shot, alley-oop, 3-point shot, alley-oop. What do you do? you change your pick and roll game on defense, you stay with by the rules. So I believe balance in every aspect of the life is important. If you are too flexible and after two mistakes, you change your defense, you will make your team insecure.
Right.
If you do stick to the rules of your system too much, you're going to lose the game. Because maybe that day your team, the other opponent were good. They were ready. So you need to have a plan B. So balance in everything. So I believe the coach is a tailor and I have to make the suit for my team. So that team was very efficient because we were extremely smart and extremely able to read. So if I had a different pace, I will put my players a little bit out of this great power they have to read every situation. So we were playing chess and we were able to keep the advantage. Other teams, maybe I should run more, but at the end, what I want my team to play the right way. So there is team that must run, but also you can have read and react right away, even running. We'll not abort that right away.
Right.
Okay, when you team that is very fast open court, you need to swallow some mistakes. And it's part of the game, because if I score 20 points in transition or in fast break, it's good. It's still 20 points that I put in the wallet. But when we play half court, you play the right way.
It's such a great conversation because I'm such a believer in freedom equals creativity. That when we give players freedoms, as you said, to action, reaction, make decisions.
Can I correct you?
Yes, of course.
You said something very nice, but I say the same thing, but I also add this to my players. You have to deserve it.
You have to earn it. And that's where I was going with it. That also applies to an offensive system. Because a lot of coaches misinterpret what I just said as saying, I just let my players play and we don't care about structure. No, no, we're very structured, but within that structure, they gain freedom from the structure, but they also gain freedom individually. Is that fair to say?
It's to the target.
Yeah.
One thing that I had a lot of problems in my career, and I consider this an area of improvement, still work in progress, is when a player come to me and say, coach, let me play, you know. And I said, sorry, what does it mean? If five players or 10 can, they all want to play, so we are a team and nobody is above the team needs. So be creative within team needs. Let me play. And it's something that for me, I struggle on that. Basically, I never see a very good player saying that. So this is another thing. Sometimes it's also a way to hide lacks. Okay? But I accept lacks. I have lacks. Players have lacks. We are here together to... What the team means, you maximize your skills and you hide your lacks. This is why you are in the... Otherwise, you go to play tennis. That is your lack and your strength. Finish.
That's great. And we all have challenges with that player saying that. And I love that. Be creative within your team needs. Coach, frame for people a little bit the role of a coach in Europe versus the role of a coach in the NBA. I mean, it's all basketball. There's a lot of similarities. But the differences you kind of already alluded to is that sometimes there's just that one player that, for lack of a better word, is a freak versus you don't have that one player. And what I try and tell people, like Europe, and let's frame this too. When we talk about European basketball, there's so many differences. That's not even a fair comment, is it? Because European basketball is not this one thing. There's a mishmash of so many styles within European basketball. So maybe what I'm getting at is let's talk a little bit about the differences so coaches appreciate a little bit more kind of the basketball that's played overseas.
Okay, I'm not good in marketing, but I truly believe that there is a lot of good stuff in Europe. The NBA is a very closed league. They are not very open, but they are starting to open their doors. And I believe we'll be more and more. The NBA is the best sports organization in the world. The product is amazing. the stars are the best stars. So we should all take something from the NBA. Okay. The NBA, for the rules they have, you cannot draft. It's a players' league. But good players know that without a good coach, they won't win. Europe is more a coaches' league where the coach is part of the process of choosing players. And I believe that sometimes this is not good. I'd say this against me because a coach has a big problem. He wants the player to play good yesterday, not today, even yesterday.
Right.
An executive, the window, the big picture is easier for him. We don't have the big picture. We are polluted by the game, the practice, the media, what to do on pick and roll, what to do that. So sometimes the coach is one of the loneliest person on earth, especially after a game. You know, you can have all your family, but you are alone. Alone in your decisions, alone in everything. So I believe the mix of the good NBA things and the good European things can lead to something unbelievable. We are forced to be a little more creative for the rules, because let's think that we always have one or two or three players in the paint. So we cannot live with dunks and layups, so we need to find a way to score in a different way.
And coach, generally, are you two practices a day? Is that still traditional, more European model, or is it one a day? Or you know the trend in the NBA is to not practice once they're inside.
But they're right.
Yeah.
When you play, 82. So let's go through this stupid legend, what they say in Europe. In the NBA, they don't care when they lose. It's not true.
Absolutely not.
When you play four games in 1 week and you lose one game bad, as a coach, you need to focus on the next one. This is already gone. This is the biggest mistake that we were used to do in Europe. Now that the EuroLeague is going towards NBA, playing back-to-back, playing four games in a week, now we understand. One of the best coaching days I had was when 2 years ago I lost on Tuesday night in Madrid against Real. The game was finished after 3 minutes. It was 27-4. And I had to play Olympiacos at home Thursday. So you fly back, regular flights, not charter flights, everything. Yeah. So my team was not ready to play, was not ready to compete, was sloppy, and was a non-game. So the choice was, should I go on them or move on and think to the next one? So I accept the bad night of my team. I didn't do any crazy Serbian stuff killing my players. I tried to rest the players that I would need the day after. You know, sometimes of course say, you are putting us in this shit. Now you play this game to the end. And after 36 hours, I played one of the best games of the season and won a huge game. So this is something that makes me understand how NBA is well organized. So you need to move on. This is very important.
It's tremendous lesson for all coaches. I mean, we all need to move on.
Sometimes you need to kill them when they deserve. Kill them means you go through the video, you see in the film room what we did wrong, and we have to do it on the court better. Very simple.
You bring emphasis back to the things that you need to do better. No, and coach, I had a good fortune of, I saw Rel practice with Pablo Laso 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I saw them practice 2 days before they left for a game. And then I saw them the day before they left for the game. So I saw preparation for a EuroLeague game. So I saw a two-day session. It was tremendous to see. And what I noticed is, again, they did a lot of five-on-five in practice in their scout. They didn't do any type of useless breakdown drills or any type of three-man weave. It was all right to game stuff. Exactly. Is that the structure that we would see from your type of practices as well, based on what you're saying?
It depends on the team you have. It depends on the goals. But I believe that the best way is to make a competitive practice, giving them the tools to play a competitive game. So what is the most competitive thing? 5-on-5. But executing, I run special situations, I call timeouts in the practice. I say, okay, now there is 54 seconds, ball to the red team, plus 4 for the white team. This is a way of coaching. Still, you control your team, but I believe that nowadays you have to go towards game situations in practice. Then when there is the day that you have to do 2-on-2 pick and roll defense, you have to do it. Because that day you have to do it because the pick and roll defense was not good. Sometimes you need to interrupt. So balance. Okay, game situations, but sometimes you need to play 3-on-0, pass and go through. Because your team became sloppy in executing basketball fundamentals. You need to do it 10 minutes. It's part of your... I compare the coach to a chef. So you have all your ingredients, and sometimes you need a little more chili, lemon. You have to mix the things.
I love the analogies that you have. A tailor, a chef. I mean, a coach is so many things. It paints the picture that as a coach, it's not just one way. It's not just one role, and it's not just one idea that shapes your team. And that's why it's such a fascinating profession and a fascinating opportunity for us to impact young people. So, Coach, you talked about from country to country. There's differences in basketball. And you've also mentioned the term Jurassic a little bit. Are most European countries shifting and evolving in how they teach the game or how they play the game? Or are there still very much regional differences in the game?
So I had the luck to coach in Italy, Greece, Russia, Germany. And at the end of the day, I could not separate basketball from the society where basketball was played. And it's a part of living. So there are countries with a lot of tradition, like Italy, Spain, Greece, Turkey, former Yugoslavia, Serbia, and Croatia, where basketball is really important. So you have a very good school of coaches. So I believe that coaches are very important to develop basketball. So we are like teachers. In every country, teachers are important to develop the next president. Maybe better than this one, maybe.
Not commenting.
No problem. So they are very capable of reading the wrinkles, be modern and creative. Other countries where basketball came later, like in Germany, basically basketball in Germany started in 1993 when they won the European, as totally underdog, they won the European basketball championship for the national teams. But because the country has a very good welfare and they're healthy, they're wealthy, the basketball is developing very quickly. So the life, it's at the end, it's facing adversity and finding solution. Basketball is the same.
Brilliant. That's well said. Coach, what are some of the potential characteristics that you find successful coaches have? What are some of the traits or some of the things that separate the best coaches, having been in the game for so long and been around so many great coaches?
Culture, passion / love for the game, being able to be honest with their players. I never saw successful coaches that are liars, because players understand after 3 seconds. Creative, true, self-ironic, and never be afraid to say, it's my mistake, guys.
Ownership of the mistakes, yeah. How about for players? What are the ideal characteristics of a player you look for? if you want to coach.
I don't know how it's in the States now, but the biggest problem I see now that players, the millennials, are not interested enough in what they're doing. Basically, they're not watching basketball. I believe that Fortnite is the biggest enemy of a young player.
Yeah.
I have two kids and they play Fortnite. So I have to fight that too. And I have no problem about video games, about smartphones and everything. But when you do one thing, you have to commit. There's no shortcuts about commitment. This is what Pat Riley said. And I go to the practice and I ask one young player last night, it was an amazing NBA game. I said, did you watch that game? What game? And at a certain point, I force my players to watch games and to have a conversation the day after. Because how you can be better if you don't see the best? You know, I believe that you can learn from watching games, everything. I was watching with one of the best players of all time in Europe is Vasilis Panoulis.
Tremendous player.
So I was watching a game with him, and he was telling me now, the coach will do this, and the player will do that. Two plays before this happened. He's a computer. This is the reason, one of the reasons, because he's one of the greatest. So passion is the most important thing. But passion is, nowadays, the word passion is too generic. So there are things you can do to be a better player. And another thing that I say to all my young players, so there will be bad days when you are not capable to practice in the right way, when you're not focused. And I don't talk about the reasons, but there will be. And remember that that day count minus one in the big picture of your player development. Think about how many minuses you will have in your life. And nobody will get back to that day. You cannot have it back. You lost it forever. So if you reduce the number of that, those minuses, maybe you have a chance to be better.
Tremendous. And since you mentioned film study, which is a big part of that, what do you do specifically for film study? Like, because the whole point is
no more than 15 minutes in the film room.
Okay.
This is the main rule.
That's with your whole team?
Yes.
Okay.
And that means 7-8 minutes of clips, because when you talk, it's double, basically. This is team meeting. Then I do individuals. Some players I do, where when I have a young player, I show, for example, how Chris Paul is playing, young point guard. So I put together, let's say, 25 clips of Chris Paul reading pick and roll. And then I give to my assistant to go through his games, what he was doing right and what he was doing wrong. The rule when you do video, so let's say film room or individual meeting, you always have to put something positive. Otherwise, he will not listen to you. You cannot just show him mistakes. So, because you are also to build a kind of confidence and trust.
Great point. And I want to circle back because I meant to ask you this. Is like, because I get asked this frequently from coaches, and that's play calling. Do you have a system that works for play calling? Or is it something that, again, is our coaches in Europe, they're trying to get your play calls? Or is that something that even matters if they have your play call, if you execute it
properly? Yes. So first of all, I love to use the word organic. So in the good years, I was able to have about 90, 100 different plays, okay? And the biggest difference is the courts in Europe are very loud, okay? So you cannot just call the play. You need to have signals. Mm-hmm. So you need to think in advance how to put on the paper the play calls. So, for example, I always try, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, then you have fist, horns, thumb, and then you can have to twist, to up, to down, to side, to flash, that is a special situation. So the calls should be logical and organic to what you are asking. So you help your players to remember what the call means. But whenever we can, we don't show the call, because this creates a little bit of problems to the scouting of the next opponent.
Well, and again, I encourage any coach that's never watched EuroLeague basketball to watch it, because, I mean, what you're basically saying is, like, they're smaller arenas, mm-hmm. but because of that, they're packed and they're loud, and there's tends to be more noisemakers in the arena, different things like that, that just creates such an amazing environment. I imagine a little bit of a, well, an extremely challenging environment to coach in, but a fun one.
Definitely. And you cannot just call the plays like this, because you need to say, we need to have eye contact the whole game, because otherwise we will not hear the call.
Other than pick and roll, what are some of the things offensively that you are really valuing or believing in now in terms of how basketball
should be? A good team is capable to play good pick and roll a lot, some good off-screen situations, some post-ups, and then a lot of quick hitters. And I also prepare my team on special situations. That means, what we do if we don't have a timeout? Or another thing that I feel very valuable is, when you call a timeout, you call the plays for two plays. You don't say only the next play. It's a way to control the play call, especially at the end of the game. Sometimes you need to call a timeout, the last timeout, earlier than the last possession, because that was a tough fourth quarter and you run out of timeouts. So you call that timeout, you say what you want from the next offense, and you said, then the last offense of the game will be.
Do those plays usually sequence together in some way? Or they can be completely different. Yeah.
Sometimes, especially at the end of the game, where switching defense is big part in EuroLeague, you need to have, I would say, two completely different things, because they will adjust to the first one. And then if you do something else, I always believe in action and reaction. If you're quick in the action, the reaction cannot be as quick as your action.
What are you telling your players on an offensive rebound? Because this is now, this is the NBA this year, right? They're going to the 14th.
I tell you one thing, because you hit the right button.
Yeah.
I was trying to implement the number of three-point shots for my team, because I have always a good percentage, but I understood that three-point shot is winning games and titles. So I was trying, how can I have more three-point shot without losing control? And when I mean losing control, Houston missing 27 shots. So their DNA is to shoot a three-point shot. But shooting 27 and miss 27 in a row in a series against, because basically Golden State is Golden State, but they right. were very close to go home against
very
you.
Close.
So had an amazing season. So I try to go on the paper. So I believe that I'm talking about 40 minutes and 48, but I want more three-point shot without crazy shots. So, and one thing is, three-point shooting after an offensive rebound is totally unstoppable. You cannot match up. So two things I say to my team. If we are able to go consistently, crash the boards, we will have more threes, and that's good. So I always go for the corner crash. Opposite corner of the ball goes always. This usually is the three man or the four man. It depends on the play. Goes very, very hard. And it's very hard to box out, because it's a dynamic situation. And I say to my bigs, or to go who goes fighting physically to the rebound, spin off the first obstacle. This will allow you at least to see the ball. So there is contact, and you spin off the first contact.
That's great. For coaches that don't understand a little bit what we're saying, is that on an offensive rebound in FIBA, it resets to 14 seconds.
Yes.
So you have less time on the shot clock to get off the shot. And now the NBA is going to go to that, I believe, this year. So I was curious because I'm also curious.
I would say that even with 24 is an open three. And I don't know if in that 24 seconds I was going to have a better shot than this.
No, because, and again, the tendency on an offensive rebound is for the defense to collapse. So that's what we're saying, is that it opens up that spacing to be able to sprint out to three and get open threes. But
I do a drill, shooting drill for this. So big guys rebound, and the shooter must just space after the rebound, and the big guy should find him very quick, just to put this in the box.
No, that's tremendous. And not necessarily with that, but in a similar vein, what are your players instructed to do in those unstructured moments? Because we want to structure it. We want to run a play. The play breaks down. The defense takes us out of it. What are the things that you have your players go to in those unstructured moments?
I believe that I want my team to have three different things. First one is to have a philosophy. The philosophy of what we are doing, how we want to do it. And the philosophy is everything. How we want to play defense, how we want to play offense, how we want to live together, how we want to do everything. Then after the philosophy, you have a strategy. And after the strategy, you have tactics. So three different levels, okay? When you are in that gray area of not structure offense, I want that we follow our philosophy. That means we play to take an open shot. And we don't settle for good shot. We want excellent shots. This is the philosophy. So if somebody is open, I deliver the ball.
In defining shot selection then, if a player has an open 15-foot shot, we want this an open shot above all else.
This is completely different from the NBA. Completely different. Because maybe I'm wrong, and you're going to tell me if I'm wrong. I saw sometimes the star of the team taking and making tough shots, and the team was good with that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes was missing tough shots. So I believe that, again, the balance is, we don't have LeBron James, we don't have Durant, we don't have Curry, we don't have Donovan Mitchell, all these players that can go solo against the defense. But at the end, I will never forget when San Antonio won the title, when Dallas won the title. So they were playing for the open man. So I always try to tell to my players, on this ball, there's not the name of one of our players. There is the name of the team. You don't have to score to make 25 shots to make us win. Because in Europe, they can send different help. And maybe you will have four players around you if you don't pass the ball. Because the game in Europe is less athletic, but a lot more physical. There is a lot of more contact. And you can ask all the NBA players. Because when you beat your man, there is another one there putting the body. And another one. When you beat your man in the NBA, it's usually a dunk. Because for the defensive three second, it's hard to help.
No, it makes a big difference for sure. And I took my team to play in Europe last year. We went to Amsterdam and played three games there. And that would be the first thing that I think any one of our players would say, just how much more physical it was.
There's contact on every play.
Yeah.
So less athletic, but more physical.
And we play FIBA rules, but again, I think it's just the difference in the styles and the way the game's played. And certainly we're very influenced by the U.S. here in Canada, but that's all part of it.
I have a dream that a star in the NBA plays involving the teammates. That means that you're going to have a ring, usually.
And it's possible. I mean, again, as you've seen, and as you alluded to, it seems like more of the, well, in some cases, more of the European style of offense is coming into the NBA.
I didn't answer to your question about the 15 feet jumper.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of the analytics. I know that the corner three is winning titles, winning games. But I will answer with a question. It's not very polite, but I will answer with a question. What are we going to do when they cover the corner three? Now there are coverages on pick and roll that they want to, for example, I do the same. I don't want to help with the second line on pick and roll. I help with the first line. So I don't give you the corner three. So sometimes I need to win the game with a pull-up jumper, 15 feet. I take it. And I'm happy if I can. It's very difficult to me to decide in advance what will be the shot to win the game, because it depends on the situation.
No, that's perfect. It is so hard to decide in advance what's going to win the game.
Okay, we have tendencies. We want to go for that. But then if I don't have that, I have to have a plan B and a plan C at least.
Well, and ultimately the defense doesn't always cooperate with us, does it?
Exactly.
The game would be a lot easier. So, Coach, this has been tremendous, and I cannot thank you enough for taking some time and talking about basketball.
It was a real pleasure.
Just wonderful. And I know so many people will be excited to see where you go next, and thank you again for taking some time.
It was really a pleasure.
To find out more about Coach and all we spoke about today, please take a look at the show notes for today's episode. I love to share the game and have basketball coaching conversations, so connect with me on social media. You can find all my social media information and all your membership, clinic, and consulting needs at basketballimmersion.com. That concludes today's episode. I know there are so many podcasts out there. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Basketball Podcast with me, your host, Chris Oliver. Please subscribe and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues so that we can keep bringing you the best of what's out there and share the game.